And we're back, and we're joined by Tony Leah, Unifor. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hi, Phil.
I was rather surprised, startled, that Senator Bernie Sanders, who is, by the way, a declared socialist, doesn't mean he is, but he says he is, and from Vermont. He was, a veteran of the 60s, 70s. He was a student nonviolent coordinating committee and all those things, I believe. But he's now a senator from Vermont, much loved in the United States. And he has introduced a legislation, I guess, calling for a 32-hour work week. And I guess he would say 32 for 40, the same amount of money, but shorter hours. He's joined, by the way, by a California congressman. His name is Takano. And I assume you may know, I don't, is their legislation is basically the same. They obviously admire each other. One is in the United States Congress, and the other is in the United States Senate. And you, the leader, I started to say, of your union, but an auto worker leader named Sean Fain, who has become probably the best, in the last few months, the best known labor leader in North America. He was asked to testify. So I know you follow these things closely. So what do you make of Bernie's argument for having a shorter work week?
I was very struck by the not just the legislation, but the framing of it by Senator Sanders and the people who were there to support it. One of the things that Bernie pointed out is that this would be the first improvement or change to the hours of work legislation in the United States since 1940. So 84 years ago, workers fought and achieved a 40-hour work week, and that took quite a battle. It went on for many, many years. And, you know, you've talked about the Haymarket and the fight for the 8-hour day. That was finally successful in 1940 in the United States. But there's been no change since then. So one of the things that Sanders pointed out is the tremendous increase in productivity of workers since that time.
Much more productive, like 400% or something. Some really
It's like 12 times. He said 12 times. I don't know exactly, but yeah.
Well, we know he's a socialist, so he never lies. So we know it's true. Go ahead.
The productivity is immensely greater, and wages are lower. In fact, one of the things that Bernie also pointed out is that if you account for inflation, workers in the United States today are making less than they were 50 years ago. And so you have this phenomenon where workers are more productive, they're creating more profits, but they have to work longer and longer hours just to try to survive. And there's people working 12-hour days, and they're working 6 or 7 days a week, and they are, on top of that, working part-time jobs somewhere else. And it's really heading back to where things were in the 19th century before there were any unions.
Yes.
And so this is a really remarkable development to focus on this issue as something that can unite workers, that can energize unions, and hopefully get more workers to join unions and energize the working class in the United States and hopefully in other countries to get back on the offensive in fighting for improvements in workers' lives.
Yeah. And he certainly, Sanders has always been very good at drawing the line, class line, saying, well, the billionaires are doing quite well and they do weller year in and year out. And meanwhile, you are saying, oh, well, if we give you 32 hours, the whole, you know, society will collapse. The workers will all get drunk. I don't know what the arguments are. By the way, I want to just mention, you can follow Sanders, and you probably should, on X, used to be Twitter, at Senators. That would be Senator Sanders. People should do that. And because you can see Sean Fain testifying. And he put the question, you referred to it, Tony. I don't know why we say 40. Sean Fain said that they have people working 7 days a week, or 7/12 is the way he put it. What in the world is that? What is he talking about?
He's talking about a practice that has been allowed to spread through particularly the auto industry in the United States, where companies have argued that when they're in a crunch, when they're facing what they consider to be some kind of crisis, that they can schedule extra hours, up to forcing people to work 12 hours a day, and in some cases, forcing them to do that 7 days a week. So that has been a practice. Under Sean Fain's leadership, they tried to curtail that in the last round of negotiations, but I think they still have a way to go on it, but they at least have started pushing back. And in the context of that, I thought it was pretty significant that in their negotiations, Sean Fain said that their objective was a 32-hour work week for 40 hours pay. So it was a much more aggressive and going on the offense against the corporations rather than, you know, just trying to fight in defense. And of course, they didn't achieve that in this round of negotiations. But part of what they were doing, I think, is setting the groundwork for mobilizing people for a stronger fight the next time they negotiate. And they are trying, they are showing some success at getting other unions on board. The legislation that Sanders introduced was backed by a number of other unions besides the UAW, including the SEIU, the flight attendants, the UFCW, Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, and the AFL-CIO endorsed the legislation. One of the other things that the UAW did in their last negotiations is that they arranged for their contract to expire next time on May Day. Yes. And they invited other unions to also have their contracts expiring on May Day, 4 years from now, in which case there's a possibility of a much broader mass strike movement in the United States around common demands like a shorter work week.
Yeah. Another person who testified there, they did a very good job. And again, you can go to Senator Sanders, and I assume you can also find Sean Fain on X or Twitter. A member of the testified, I thought she was amazingly eloquent. She said that she was a full-time temporary worker, and that she comes from a auto worker family. Her grandparents were, I guess amongst the original people. And she said they won pensions and they won health care, and they had that. She said, I'm their granddaughter, great granddaughter of auto workers. I don't have it. If I come to the end of my time, they will say, have a nice day. And she's done.
Yeah.
Now that is, to me, that was, I said to myself, holy smoke, this woman should be heard all over the country because she's living evidence of how they're sliding backward. Yeah. But, the other thing is that these are workers testifying in front of the United States Senator and his committee, and a bill is being introduced. I don't know of anything comparable where auto workers are going in front of any committee in Ottawa and telling their story, and they could tell the same story. Am I right?
You're right. The conditions have been very similar in the United States and Canada. And of course, we're dealing with the same corporations. We're bargaining with General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis, the former Chrysler, in both the United States and Canada. And so And we're facing the same conditions because that's what those corporations have been bringing about, what they have, you know, been able to impose on workers in both countries. And it really has been remarkable and horrible the way that workers have had any chance of a stable and decent standard of living taken away from them and being forced into what's sometimes called precarious work, jobs that don't have seniority, don't have job security, don't have set hours, and don't have any prospect of a secure retirement at the end of the working life. And that is true in both the United States and Canada, and really cries out for greater solidarity in taking on these issues.
And political engagement. It seems to me that all unions should have a strong political commitment and to engage and to be calling for legislation. And we've talked about this. Here, the issue of scabs. And we like to point out that in Quebec, they got themselves legislation so that an employer can't decide to use scabs. He doesn't have that option because the law says there's not going to be any scabs. So it strikes me that we ought to be looking around and the union should be demanding, to put it very vulgarly or directly, George Galloway type people or Bernie Sanders type people. Mm-hmm. And because there's been a tendency, I believe, I can't think of it as a union cliche, but to think of politics as remote, saying, well, we'll do it. We, the unions, we'll go do that. But they don't do it. And they're losing out. Whereas if they developed a component such as Sean Fain's talking about, where you suppose they all had their contracts up on May Day, you would have the biggest political rally every once a year. And they would be able to remind the employers, okay, here's what we want, mm-hmm, at those rallies. Let's speak to the practical side. Sanders and the congressman from California, they've got the numbers. They said, look, Belgium is working 32 hours right now. They have 32 hours. Denmark has 37. France has 35. And they're all talking about reducing that with Belgium in the lead. All those, by the way, are countries where the workers are producing. You know, the workers, everything being done. But also, they say, and they produced studies, that if they work shorter, if they can get a 32-hour week, by the way, are we talking 4 days or five days short with shorter hours?
I think that the intention roughly is 4 8-hour days.
4 days, 4 8-hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they say that you get a healthier workforce, more focused, et cetera. Did you look at that? Is that persuasive?
Absolutely, it's persuasive. And of course, it's also, I mean, it shouldn't be looked at as in any other way, I think, than what is best for workers. Workers should be fighting for what's best for workers. And anybody who's ever worked in an industrial environment, anybody who's ever worked in an auto plant knows that what workers need is to be inside that environment the least number of hours and the fewest days possible, because it destroys people's bodies and health, and takes away time from their families and from things that they want to do to get any enjoyment out of life. And Sean Fain, you know, made a very strong point about that. And so when workers have been able to reduce the amount of time that they have to work for the employer, it benefits them and their families and their health in many ways, as you know, as you pointed out.
Mm-hmm. I've of course lived for some time during my work in Africa, I spent time in Belgium. You know, it's interesting about this class consciousness and what the demands turn into. It's I think pertinent that in Belgium you can't tip because the workers are making a living wage. They have their hours and they're not dependent on, you know, whoever comes in and out. I witnessed a couple of American lawyers, one from Philadelphia, who I think has been tipping people since he was 10 years old. And he was in a neurotic condition because he kept trying to give money to a server in a restaurant. And the guy kept saying, please stop doing that. We don't take tips. And he kept it. I swear, I thought as we leave, he's going to try to put a bill in the guy's pocket because he had his own. He has become so used to the idea that he's going to be paying part of that guy's living. But the guy has a living and he has pension and he has health care. And believe me, they're not kidding. There's no tipping. Yeah. And so I was struck by the fact that, yeah, and they're the ones with the 32-hour work week, too.
That's right. And of course, the corporate leaders in the United States and Canada argue that they can't afford to do that. They can't afford to pay workers a decent salary and provide them with pensions. But, you know, lo and behold, as you point out, in other countries, workers have all of those things and, you know, and society functions amazingly.
Because but, you know, that woman from the UAW, and I'm urging you, please go and watch her testify. She said that they told them that when they asked for the pension and et cetera. And she said their answer to them was that Wall Street would look down on them for making that. So they can't make a concession because the other fat cats would all say that's, you know, now you're going to create problems.
That's right. Yeah. No, and it is such an ingrained class system that, you know, we've been told for so many years, and the media tells us constantly that we can't do this or we can't do that because, you know, it's going to upset the apple cart because you can't take away from these barons of industry, these billionaires.
You remember the goose, right? The goose that laid the golden egg. You don't want to kill the goose. Even though the goose is looking, what is that goose that they fill it full of stuff? It's a duck. Anyway, we'll get there. But they're doing okay.
And they're doing more than
us. It doesn't occur to them, and that is Sanders' strong point. He says their money has gone through the roof. And yet they can actually, with a straight face, say we cannot afford to give you health care and pension and matters of that kind.
Yeah, so, that's right. The increase in the take for the owners of the industries has been phenomenal. And meanwhile, workers are actually getting less. So it's not a question of whether it's possible or not. It's a question of, you know, they don't want to give up any of it. And yeah. So we have to fight to get what workers need or closer to what workers need. So.
Well, that was Sean Fain's testimony. They asked him to explain what he thought the problem was. And he said, greed. You only need one
greed.
Word. greed. And by the way, I think when he says that, it resonates across America. This is not a major. People are really tired of being pushed around.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
They've just, you know, they've, and we are going to see more Sean Fains. I find it very encouraging. You say these other unions. And I have to ask you, are you aware of the Canadian Labour Congress or of any comparable unions in Canada calling for 32 hours?
No, I'm not. And I'm not aware of any legislation being put forward. There are a couple of positive things happening. There has been a big push for anti-scab legislation in the federal jurisdiction, and Unifor, my union, has been part of that push. So that's a positive move, and is modeled on what has existed in Quebec since 1976.
I'm glad you made that point, because you know that we should tell everyone that in the United States, under President Grant, they got the 8-hour day for federal workers. 1868. I hope, of course, it wasn't until, 1938 or 1940 they got the 40-hour week after. But it had already been there for the federal workers.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, it's all part of a history of struggle. The railroad workers won it in collective bargaining first in the United States. And that was, you know, around the time of the First World War, I believe.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was 1960.
Yeah. And we went through the same process in Canada. Workers fought in the 19th century for a 9-hour day. And then railroads, again, were one of the first to get a 40-hour week in Canada. My own union, which was founded in Oshawa, the strike in 1937, one of the major demands that they made and achieved was to shorten the work week. At that time, they reduced it from 54 hours to 44 hours. But that was a gain, and with an increased pay. Right? So it has to be part of fighting for what workers need. At that time, the idea that workers would ever get pensions was considered ludicrous. Pensions were only something for corporate executives and the like, not for workers. Workers were supposed to work until they keeled over. But we did fight for and achieve pensions, and it's such a horror story that's been taken away from so many workers in the last 20 or 30 years. But we ought to fight to get that back.
Yeah, no, it's they will come, and the expression is clawed back. They'll find a way, and here you will have the granddaughter of the auto workers saying, "My grandpa got a house, and he had, with his wages, he got health care, he got a pension, and I don't." So they, and there's a bunch of lawyers in there somewhere. This is, I think we're about coming to the time. Tony, if you've been watching that.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great to talk to you. And we're inviting you back, because in just a moment, Tony and I are going to be discussing the late Michael Quigley, and we're going to have some other matters as well. Thanks very much. We'll come back.